back, you want to move up behind the front row here so you can hear and see, please do.
Yes, let me know if you can't hear me. Also, let me know if I skip something, if I'm not explaining something that, you know, you don't know what I am talking about, I just keep talking. So do let me know, just stop me. So I want to talk about poetic forms, haiku as an example. I think at the end, you have, you know, we've talked a lot about what's the difference between really poems and prose writing, where the demarcation line is. So like a free verse poems, if they're written free verse, no rhyming, you know, no counting of stresses, is it still a poetry? You know, that we've talked about those things a lot. So I thought maybe just another way of looking at what the poetic form is, and something I work a lot is haiku, so I try to use haiku as sort of as an example. Okay, let's get into the mood. So maybe with Jeannie, would you, like one by one, would you slowly read those three lines, and the next person, the next one? I have 11 pieces to read.
Silence, between words, stories. Desert stretched to the horizon, silence.
Pond lilies flowing in their centers, silence. Silence in a rain shower, seven colors.
Okay, thank you.
Winter leaves, buds of tightly rolled silence.
Winter leaves.
I just did that one.
What is it about?
Silence around a waiting bird, the nest.
Silver-tipped firs, snow-deeping, silence.
Silence between crashing waves, the briefness of the wind.
Riptide in the sea, the pool of silence.
Silence drawing together a lover's, a silver cord.
A blossom's dance, the urge deep within, silence.
Thank you. So these are haiku written by Jane, how do I pronounce this,
Reichhold.
I believe everything she says. She's written a lot of books on haiku. She's really the expert on haiku written in English. Right, okay. So, I'm often asked, you know, somebody write something short, and I'm often asked, is this haiku? Would you call this haiku? And most of the time I say, kind of yes. But this is the word of this Jane Reichhold, and I think this is my guidance. If I see something, it's written in the form of a haiku, we're going to discuss that later, it's written in the the right number of words, or, you know, keeping all the rules, it's short, and still, is this haiku or not? So those are the guidelines I sort of think of, like being aware, this is, you know, kind of meditative, but also be here now type way of thinking, and being non-judgmental. Haiku has nothing to do with being right or wrong, and being reverent. There's an interesting story I've read. Basho's students, his name is Kikaku, he writes a haiku, it's very humorous haiku. And one day he came up with this one. Dragonflies chop their wings off red pepper. And when the Basho heard it, he said, how about red pepper give them wings, dragonfly? Mm. So that's, I guess, what they mean by reverent. Well, has some, you know, Buddhist way of thinking is in haiku as a background. So, and having a sense of oneness. Sense of oneness meaning human beings in nature. So in many of Eastern thinking, human and nature is just one thing, right? So that, and having a sense of simplicity, not the simplistic, but when you read it, is it simple or is it like complicated? Or is it like too many big words, too conceptual? So that's one of the guidelines. And having humility. That's very, you know, closely related to being non-judgmental. So this is, you know, it's an important part of haiku, but it's not stated as a form. So we're going to talk about the form today. I tried to stay on the form, not the aesthetic, not the spiritual side of it, but still, I think this is an important guideline to determine whether a piece of writing is haiku or not. Okay. So, what is poetic forms? So, what comes to your mind first when you hear the word poetic form?
Structure.
Yes. Like sonnet, maybe? Mm-hmm. Rhyming or stresses, accents?
Stresses.
So I guess, you know, everything is, of course, poetic forms. So one way to look at it is line. Line is the unit of poetry. You know, the difference between poems and prose is where you finish the line. So prose writers, they go into the right margin and then go to the next line. But for poets, we always have to decide how you want to end the line. Also, how long should it be? And how does it sound, especially in English language traditional poetry? You know, how the accent's going to dance? You have to make the decision and then stick to it. Is that everything? Yeah. In some languages, French, Chinese, Japanese, we don't have these accents. We are strictly...
You don't have any what?
Yeah, the accent. Like in English, you have a, you know, you pronounce word with the accent, right? With the rhythm. But other languages, some languages, just go flat. So we go by syllables, by counting syllables. So, you know, just the different, but there's a requirement for each line, how you want to do that. Then there's a line organization. So it's like a stanza. So you want to have four lines per stanza, quatrain, or two lines, couplets. We make that decision, how we want to organize our lines. And of course, how many lines? Sonnets have 14 lines. Villanelle has 19.
Yes.
And the other one has 39 lines. So there are a certain number of lines. There are
other
rules.
Ones.
And then as far as content goes, repetition requirements. So Pantoum, Villanelle, Sestina, they all... we have to follow the rules when you repeat the certain lines. And development, meaning sonnet, for example, original Italian sonnet, they did 8 lines of development, 6 lines of conclusion, sort of. Then, like by the time of Shakespeare, it became, I understand, 4, 4, 4, and couplets. That's how you end sonnet. And also rhyming schemes in Italian is all ABAB because it's much easier to rhyme in Italian, so they can use the same type of rhyming all the way. You still have so many words to choose from. But in case of English, it's a little harder, so they have rhyme scheme of AB, CD, and EF. So you can choose different sets of words to end each line, and that's okay for sonnets that's written in English. So, you know, forms are not anything stationary. It keeps developing, it's changing all the time. By elements, I mean, so for example, haiku requires season word. only in Japanese haiku, but there are certain requirements.
Kind of
season word?
Single.
Season.
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 Okay. Yeah, we have a dictionary like this. Every haiku writer owns a dictionary like this. There are so many versions, so different groups like different sets of words. But so this is by like in spring and astronomy, and you can find words, explanation of that keyword. It's like a trigger word. And then there are examples, historically, what kind of haiku was written using that word. And then we share, you know, we use always one word is the same, just, you know, we just share. So that we can meet for haiku writing, and we pick a word, and everybody writes using that word, which takes up 5 words out of 575. So wow. 1/3, it's all the same. And how different can you be with the rest? That's the fun part. Okay, the theme. So of course I talked about this oneness, non-judgmental, that could be, you know, kind of included in the theme. But also I'm talking about like ballads, odes, elegy. You know, there is a certain content to go with the name or the group of the poem. So that's also a form. Then other things, presentation. So is it a single person's work? Is it as a group work? Or is it spoken, unspoken? So different presentation method also classify poems into different categories. Then at the same time, if I was trying to follow a certain form, there are so many advice, guidance that's available as a craft skills. Those are sometimes written, sometimes just learned. You know, you go to workshop, you can learn something new. Okay, you can do this, you can make it better. And that's part of the form, I believe. You know, it's an idea shared by different poets. And also, you can make up your own form, which free verse is one. Free verse is a form, but poets normally have some kind of personal rules, ideas, how you want to carry your ideas. So they are all poetic forms. Any questions? So good? So far so good.
This is interesting. I mean, so for example, you said free verse. Mm-hmm. That's a form.
Could say that, yeah.
You could say that, yeah. But that's what it doesn't mm-hmm. sound like. You're definitely saying
right.
that.
Right, yes, I am saying that actually. Because okay. free verse came, say, 100, maybe 30 years ago it happened, as part of that modernism movement. People wanted to get away from old restricting rules, wanted to be free.
Okay.
But just free, just write anything, didn't last that long.
Okay.
So people came up with, in the world of the art, visual art, I think, Mary, it's the same thing. People came up with cubism,
okay,
or dadaism,
right, okay.
or, you know, just people end up having another form.
Right, okay.
But different from traditional forms, but still a form.
So forms evolve.
Mm-hmm.
They
right.
evolve.
Yes. Also, like we talked about prose poem,
right.
that also came sort of about that time, that from France, but that's also 1800s. So things changed a lot during that time. Okay. So, sorry, maybe it's a little hard to see. Now, we're going back to haiku. The haiku's sort of history. Haiku is at the bottom, and on top of that, renga renku, which is a linked verses. So if you have one haiku, I could say, if Robin writes one haiku, I try to match it. And then somebody else come in and continue. It could be a story, it could be just pick a word and keep continuing. So you have some kind of scenario going, but you don't know what's really going on. So you need a really strong leader to control that flow. If you think about, there are 30 people, you know, reading haiku one after another. How do you control the flow? That was what the Basho was expert at. Have you ever heard of Basho? Yeah, he is the haiku guy. He lived mid-1600. And he completed what, as we know as haiku, sort of, philosophically speaking, appearance-wise. But he was always with his group of students, and his most famous work actually is the anthology of those students' works, including his. He had an amazing control, and he had his aesthetic did come through other people's words as well. So he did that in 1600s. But before that, about 300-400 years, Renga Renku was a big thing. People were writing other kind of poetry before then, but about 1200 people, I think the tanka, I'm going backward, but the tanka peaked out, and the elegance was the purpose of tanka poem. And people started getting a little tired of it and started to have some fun. That came to the linked verse and become haiku. So haiku is supposed to be very light, should be fun, humorous. At the same time, you know, of course, it should be beautiful and zen and all that kind of things. But compared to the older form, that's supposed to be much more fun. And tanka is 5-7-5-7-7, which is 7-7 longer than haiku, as far as syllable counts goes. So this form was completed sometime between 4th and 8th century. By the end of 8th century, there are lots of anthology came out. So like 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th century, just emperors kept ordering, putting together anthologies. So we have a great records of tanka anthologies, which is tanka still is popular. So it's probably the backbone of entire Japanese literature is in this tanka poem. But it's changed a lot these days. It is more like a young people's conversation is tanka nowadays. It's really like love poems, but really like a boyfriend talking to girlfriend, like a pop song almost. The most popular tanka is that way. But it's been going on since, say, 5th century all the way down today. And tanka, haiku, both very popular, probably tens of thousands of poems are published in journals and newspapers every year. So it's nothing, you know, limited to very special people. A lot of people write haiku. And there are lots of contests. And if you buy a tea in this kind of bottle, there is one company, they always put haiku on the side of the bottle. So it's just, you know, something very natural for us. And we do have also at the bottom, if you could see, we have other type of poems or lyrics. It's very similar, but not exactly 5-7-5 syllables. Go 7-7-5, 7-5-7-5, just keep going. So that's, I could say, that's a very natural rhythm for the Japanese language. Like, what is iambic pentameter, da-da-da-da-da-da, is a natural rhythm for English. This is, whether the language like this and became like this, or because we write so many poems like this, we got used to it, I don't know. But.
And again, tell us again, haiku is what's the numbers for haiku, the rhythm for haiku?
5-7-5.
5-7, so it's just the 3-5-7.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The tanka doesn't seem to be the same in terms of attitude either.
Yes.
It seems more like proffering an opinion in some ways, or an attitude.
The contemporary tanka, yes. But before, tanka's main use was like a love letter between man and woman. They exchanged tankas the morning after. The men always supposed to send women some poem. And then women judge men based on that based on the poetry. If you don't receive it, that's a disaster.
You're done. Right.
So elegant, but also sometimes it could be cynical, you know, or resentful. I waited for you all night, but you didn't come. That kind of poem happens too. So, but it's more communicative, not just saying one short visual message and then done. No, not really. Yeah, it's a little bit longer. I show you one example that what happens when it gets longer, because I find that last seven syllable so long. Why is it necessary? Sometimes I do wonder that. Okay. So, oh yeah, here it is. So Sankey is a modern haiku poet. He wrote this one, possibly my guardian angel, a winter sparrow. And somebody made a tanka out of it. And he's a playwright. And it was kind of scandalous when he did that. People thought he wrote a very good tanka, and then found out he actually borrowed somebody else's work and, you know, added his words to it. Possibly my guardian angel, a winter sparrow. I shot it and went home with the smell of gunpowder. People loved it. But then, but actually it is okay in the culture of haiku or tanka to borrow someone's work and make changes to it is a standard thing to do. It's done all the time. But if the reader didn't know that, they find out later, they feel a little betrayed. But he did so many like this, and it does happen. So you see the 7-7 part, the new part, is almost as long as the first part. So possibly my guardian, and then about the same length. So you kind of have to make the attitude clear, yes, right? So you see the sparrow, oh, it might be a guardian angel. But if it's tanka, so what you do? So what part has to be added?
Well, the attitude's completely different in the second.
Completely different. Well, you don't know what the Sankey was thinking, actually.
Be helped. The 575, whichever one you choose here, were originally Japanese constructs of syllables. So when we're dealing with English, how should we think about syllables?
Right. I think when it's translated, it's very different. So let me see. Okay. I'm going to read some Japanese haiku. So 575, if you understand what that means for us. Okaze no yoto nareri ni kai sumai ni. Matsu no muki, muki sora yoku hare, sora ao yoku hare tari. So this ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. That's 575 for us. It's not syllable, it's really a sound. And what happens is, if you write haiku with in English, 575 syllables, most of the time it is too long for me to translate that into Japanese, keeping 575 sound. So it's just a difference in, some of the example I gave was, oh, so you say McDonald's. So McDonald's, two sound basically, right? But when we say McDonald's in Japanese, it's going to be McDonald's. So it's six. So there's so many words. What would that be? What would be a good one? Table and chairs. Table and chairs. Yeah, that's going to be 机と椅子. So it's almost always Japanese word ends up longer.
So, I mean, is the 575 really more about how it's read as much as about how it's written?
Yes.
Because it's not like what you're doing is about rhythm. Like as if you were singing and you hit notes. Mm-hmm. And that's what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. Writing is really, it's not so much the words, but the rhythm.
Yeah. It's the spoken. It's the sound. Because we use Chinese characters and two different kind of alphabets combined. So Chinese character could sound more than one word, more one sound. So it's always the sound.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, question.
Yeah.
Is the haiku meant the priority to be read silently or aloud? Or is there a priority in the focus?
Back then, when people were writing linked verse, it was read aloud. But later on, when it's printed, become a book, we just read it. So depends on the occasion, but it should be both. But the thing is, like I said, that we're so used to hearing haiku, even if reading, people have immediate understanding of how that should be read. And we have no punctuation, rewrite it in one line, but sometimes we have to give it, you know, give it a try, but most of the time we know how that should be read. But without the training, yeah, it's a little hard. But it's, yes. So I just wanted to show you, the haiku, you might think there's a lot of blank space, it's maybe slow to be savored, but actually haiku is a very fast poetry form. When it's introduced, normally it's read pretty fast, but twice, but it just keeps on going. So as I said, no punctuation, no, you know, line, no turns, in just one line. You could probably see it, but this one line, this is one haiku. So you keep going, you know, no space, no marks. In modern form, some people play with it, but normally there's no nothing. And then people, Issa is another famous one. He lived in the 18th century, 1700. But it's like this, goes out, come back, love of life of a cat. So it just vroom, done. Then you can think about it. If something stay with you, you think about it. But sometimes, you know, we get it very quickly too. You get the message because it's visual, sort of. Not quite visual in this case, but so you get the picture and then, you know, move on. It's like that. The man pulling radishes points my way with a radish. Deer licking first frost from one another's coats. Even with insects, some can sing, some can't. Not very anxious to bloom, my plum tree. Not knowing it's in the kitchen, the fish cooling in the tub. So just, you know, keep on going. And something you remember, something you think about, something when you are in a situation, you remember what you heard. That's how sort of haiku works. So, haiku in Japanese and in English. We write it in one line, 5-7-5 sounds. We need season words, like a frost or spring, or like events of a year, like a New Year's, or certain food that comes in that season, or the stars formation, whatever, just anything that indicates. That's why we have this dictionary. Sometimes it's very confusing. The moon is almost always autumn. But of course we have moon all year round, mm-hmm. but often so many moon words are autumn. You have to be autumn. So it's arbitrary sometimes.
In Japanese, are there a lot of different words for the same thing?
Or yes.
It's a more visual language than English?
Well, English has the largest vocabulary in the world because English has the different roots, right? Uh-huh. You know, the Latin is one, and Anglo-Saxon and the German, you know, so you do have lots of languages, but every language incorporate new words. So mm-hmm. Christmas is a season word for us mm-hmm. too. But because it's visual, I don't know, there are so many words for different kind of moon, because we've been writing about moon and cherry blossom thousands of years. We kind of people come up with new words all the time. So in that sense, in some certain things, yes, there are maybe more words, or little tricky words. It doesn't mean anything, but it's like a metaphor. Or it's just another name. Because, for example, if you go to sushi bar in Tokyo, if you call, give me purple, that means you're asking for soy sauce. It's a secret word meaning soy sauce. It's purple, murasaki. So,
all right.
Yep. Or say like, tell me goodbye, that means give me a check. So, you know, just a different vocabulary developed over the years. So, all right. And in English, the biggest difference is there is no requirement of season words. That's kind of understandable that Japanese season words do not translate directly into other countries. Well, U.S. is in the northern hemisphere, it's better, but like in Australia or Africa, a lot of people write haiku, you know, totally different. Seasons are different. Also, what you have, plants, animals, everything's different. So, but I understand there is an English season word dictionary that exists. Some people use it, some haiku poets. use it in America too. Then again, you know, we have different cultural background, different language. So haiku in Japanese, haiku in English, very, very different. But I have something in common. There is something in common. That is, I think, how to write a small poem, the craft issues, some things we should think about when writing haiku, whether in Japanese or in English, there are certain things that's common to both languages. So I noticed that when I translated some haiku that's written in English, and I tried to translate into Japanese, or the other way around, trying to translate Japanese haiku into English. So of course, word we translate first, but how to finish both, you know, either of them, Japanese or English, I have to work hard to finish it to sound like haiku in either way. And then tricks are pretty similar. It works both ways, interestingly. And it actually, it's not only haiku, for any short poem writing, I think it comes down to the same thing. All right. So, okay, 575 syllables. I told you they're too long. And many writers do agree. So in many of the haiku sort of textbook type books, they talk about 575 syllables in English words are too long. Not only it's inconvenient to translate into Japanese, but it does not capture what the Japanese haiku does by using too many words. So what they are suggesting is 7 accented syllables plus unaccented syllables up to 12. So instead of 575, which is 17, they're suggesting 12. But if we talk about accented words, it's 2 or 3 words. In the first line, 2 words, 3 words, 2 words. For example, Jeep trucks over deer trucks in the new snow. That's, if I translate that, pretty much it goes to Japanese almost directly. Okay. So this is the new norm. However, at the school, they are still teaching 575 syllables.
Yes, they are.
And so many teachers approach me, and I used to teach kids, you know, the haiku. I wrote a lot, the 575, because it's a tool to teach how to count syllables. True. So, I mean, so that stay 575. But people who write all the time and people who publish on journals, they write much shorter these days. And then a major grammatical pause between the second and third and fifth and sixth accented syllables. That means basically line. So the Jeep trucks, over deer trucks. So between these over deer trucks in the snow, there is a little bit of a break. And the next one, to hear them walking more slowly, pose, leaves falling. So that's what they're talking about. And in Japanese haiku too, we do have a break, but we don't, we write it in one line, there is no space. There's a special word to divide poems in between. It's like a punctuation, but it's a word. And the last three, for example, grammar should be stripped to the minimum that seems reasonably natural. Complete sentences may or may not occur. And articles and prepositions should be used sparingly but not unnaturally omitted. That's okay. How you write poems anyway. So I think those things are common to both languages and then also in haiku and a little bit longer poems. A yellow leaf stuck between screen and window, not the word. This one I tried to translate and the middle line is 4 syllables and I just can't squeeze that into Japanese. So if I translate into Japanese, I probably have to delete not a word, which seems to be a punchline, but I have to take that out because I cannot take anything else out, really. Or I have to rewrite in as far toward the tree as the wire mesh gives dash the fox's nose. I think it's really cute. And we don't have this, but this one I think I can translate within the word limit.
Is there no punctuation even in prose?
There is. We do have similar punctuation in prose, but in haiku, we don't.
Okay.
Tanka, we divide the lines.
All right.
Yeah, it's a little bit too long, I think. Absolutely. Just the haiku, no punctuation. Okay. Okay, so this one, before and after. So they are different translators. First one is a more literal translation from Japanese. She, actually that's Jane Reinhold, she translated all Basho poems. And she did a great job. And it's mostly correct. It's really accurate translation. Mm-hmm. And after is done by a translator named David Young. And he is an excellent translator. He's a poet. And he doesn't do only Japanese. He translates Greek poems, Spanish poems. So probably he does have someone help him, but he finishes it. You know, he probably studies the language. He can read it. I mean, he's a scholar, but he does all sorts of different languages. But he really takes liberty in his translation. So, the growing melons, I wish you were here in the evening coons. It's not clear, right, who is growing melons in English. Probably the person is a farmer, or maybe you have a garden. But in Japanese also, it's not very clear who is doing it. But he changed it, cool of the evening, watching the melons grow, you should be here. Watching the melons grow, it's not actually possible, is it? Like staring at the melons, they don't grow. However, if you just don't know the original translation, if you just read that one, you think he's talking about passage of time. The person just left him or been gone for a long time, could be either. But I think he introduced something else to this poem. And that's what happens when you write a poem too. You start writing something, and then if something else works better, you change it. You know, do whatever for the poem to work.
Well, the word so, should really changes that.
Mm-hmm, that too, it's stronger. Mm-hmm. Or same meaning, but it's a little stronger.
Yeah,
and also,
does it change the meaning? I mean, it uses the article. It seems to me it would be something, you know, you could make it shorter.
The second one?
The after.
Mm-hmm.
After. Cool, coolness, evening coolness, watching
mm-hmm.
melons grow.
Mm-hmm.
We should be here.
Good. Yes, you could. Good. Cool of the evening. Cool evening. Yeah, it's possible, but he didn't for this one. Sometimes, if you chop it too much, it's not choppy, really. So I think he tries to find a balance somewhere. If you take everything out, if it's not necessary, if you don't feel cool of the evening, it's different from cool evening, actually, after all, is it? And then it's a balance, I think. That, but anyway, this was his decision to stay that way. Yeah. Yes, but good point. I try to make as short as possible every time. Yes, that is true. Then if it sounds choppy, normally I show it someone like Robin, you know, is it too choppy? Then I bring back some words. That's
and possible. So again, that's based on how you're hearing it.
In English?
Yeah, even
yeah.
in English,
yes.
because even there,
right.
you say, because if it said cool of evening, watching melons grow, you should be here. And so you would have to hear
mm-hmm.
if it's choppy
mm-hmm.
by taking
mm-hmm.
a herbal.
I think almost all in poetry, it's about how it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And how
that's
you can say it and how that sounds. So everything, yeah. So this one, this is also by Basho, actually. But he used this Saigyo's tanka, and he changed the pine tree to watermelon, I mean, to melon. So it's supposed to be a little funnier. The maybe pine tree is a little bit more stately, beautiful. This one by the root of a pine on the banks of Iwata River, cooling off in the evening. Wish you were here is what I think. Kind of long, but anyway, this is tanka. But Basho, Saigyo is a very famous tanka poet. He was also a monk, and he was Basho's hero. So of course, 500 years before him, but the Saigyo's poems are everywhere. And the Basho, actually his trip to the northern land was he followed the footsteps of this poet. He went up there, so Basho went there too. So he had a lot of, he borrowed the tanka and changed it. That he did a lot. So that's one way how kind of tradition continues. And this is the season word. So tsuki tenshin, it's supposed to be five because tenshin sounds longer, but the tsuki tenshin, so it's supposed to be kind of five, meaning the moon at the zenith, at the top, right above you. And then there are famous haiku, which everything starts with is the moon at the zenith.
So is that an autumn word?
Yes.
Okay.
The moon at the zenith, going through a bleak town. So you imagine the bleak town and the moon is up there. And another person wrote another haiku, same beginning, the moon at the zenith straightens every shadow.
Mm.
Kind of scientific observation. And the moon at the zenith lost for words for a while. So this is more, I think this is a very contemporary haiku poet. Maybe two people, boyfriend, girlfriend, walking. Then the moon at the zenith, the Maasai jump straight up. It's a totally different image. So same words, just different ways. So that's how you play with haiku a lot. This one also, he changed a lot. If you just read, sight of that mountain makes me forget I'm getting old. So it's a, you know, it's a beautiful mountain. Maybe the beauty make me forget I'm getting old, or thinking the mountain was there even before I was born, it'll be there before I'm gone. That may be the thought. But the original one, overlooking it, when I see the view of Suma, life is autumn. It's kind of, it doesn't make any sense to you. Because autumn, meaning the people's life, when a young person is spring, you know, summer, autumn, so that's a kind of common usage of the season word. And also Suma is a name of place which is dear to us. It's been sung in just thousands of years. So in a way, it makes sense to us, but I think David Young did a very good job of turning it to something that speaks to the reader of the English language. And writing poem, we can do the same thing. We have this idea, but how do we present it at the end? We keep changing. And one way is, maybe this is what I wanted to say all along, but maybe not. You just thought of it as you edit and revise. It's possible, whatever that works. This one is actually after is total silence, then cicada buzz drilling the rock. It's a good capture of the moment. However, actually it's a very wrong, limited interpretation of the original poem. Heard such stillness piercing the rock, a cicada's voice is a lot closer to what the Basho. There are 1,000 people discussed this poem over the years, but the consensus is this stillness is in your heart, the stillness of your heart. And we don't distinguish single and plural, so actually we don't know we are talking about one cicada or, you know, like a bunch of them in the tree. And you just, you know, you're hearing that, but your heart is calm. That's it's said to be the meaning of this poem. But who knows? But one interpretation. Then, I'm talking about images. Have you heard of the words? That, like Ezra Pound, H.D., there are like William Carlos William. Those poets wrote very visual poem. Well, Ezra Pound really didn't, but he tried to bring the idea of visualness. Forget abstract, forget conceptual. That's one of the modernist movement. That kind of coincided with, they say that maybe from the haiku it started, but that's not necessarily so, because in France, something like that's been going on already. So I guess entire world was going to conceptual, religious, spiritual, to something you can actually see and share, the sharing experience type movement, I guess. That seems to be what was happening. And that changed the poetry, the art, anything, music, everything got changed. So like a romantic, normal symphony to cacophony, really. There was terrible music in the early 20th century. And, you know, it's changed a lot. So that also affected, actually, Japanese haiku, too. So I introduced a couple of short haiku. It's Taneda Santoka, so his years, it's modern times. And his work is Father In Yet, Green Hills. It's awfully short. In Japanese, it's 555. Wakeitemo, Aoyama. So that was, you know, it was an outrage. You know, it should be 575. It's 555. But of course, he did not start this way. He was writing normal haiku 575. But he felt, just for this one, Father Inyet, he just wanted to repeat. And there's a pose there. Two syllable words, pose. You don't see it, but you should feel it. So that's his idea. But people don't do that much anymore, sort of. But that was the time. You know, people did outrageous things, and that was new. And then, you know, things go back, or, you know. So another one is the coughing even alone. There's no punctuation in Japanese, but it's seki o shitemo hitori. It's eight syllables, just one sentence. So it's totally. And another one, wonderful breast, a mosquito. So this one is subarashii chibusata. That's, I don't know what that is, eight. Kagairu, there's mosquito, that's five syllable. But he did that, he was awfully popular. Actually, this is his book right here. Sometimes it's difficult to read it because, you know, I don't know what comes. Normally I know exactly how to read it, but his haiku is different. I have to read it a couple times to make sure what's going on. So that was the modern times. And contemporary, the bottom two, she writes traditional way, and also subject-wise, you know, Lost in Paper, Rock, Scissors, I Was Born a Firefly. This is her most famous haiku, hers. Well, she's called the Firefly Lady for this one. And the death will come, just as spring never fails to arrive. That's like a spirit of old tanka. But she does it in haiku, and she repeats it. She does it very beautifully. And top three, a little different. It's almost like a fantasy something. That's her. She stole the Eiffel Tower. That's his haiku. I think it's 575, actually, in Japanese. But the content is not very typical. Give me your softball. Just a theory, the umbrella guy prepared the sunset. He's really popular. It's kind of, and his name is kind of, Boshi means hat. So it's a you know, pseudonym, pen name, but his name is Hat. So people do, you can do anything, actually. Then going back to summer, I end with, time is okay?
8:17.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, really? Sorry, yeah. Very quickly. The American sentence is Ginsberg. Also, he came from haiku world, sort of. But this one, like, he gave a title, Tompkins Square, Lower East Side, New York. Four skinheads stand in a streetlight rain, chatting under an umbrella. So this came from haiku. This came from haiku to one line poem, and he gave a title. Haiku never have a title, but so what? It's okay, he can do what he wants, and he's doing what he wants to do. Approaching Seoul by bus in heavy rain. Get used to your body, forget you were born, suddenly you got to get out. Mm-hmm. Or put on my tie in a taxi, short of breath, rushing to meditate. November 1991. And well, this one I don't know what to think. Rainy night on Union Square, full moon. Want more poems? Wait till I'm dead. It's very Ginsberg. Another one, my favorite poet. She's also a beat. Makeup on empty space. This came also from a one-line poem, and she uses a lot of like a blues music. When she performs, she sort of half sings and blues singers, and some of her lines are very bluesy sometimes. I'm putting makeup on empty space. All patinas convening on empty space. Rouge blushing on empty space. I'm putting makeup on empty space. Putting eyelashes on empty space. Painting the eyebrows on empty space. Piling creams on empty space. Painting the phenomenal world. I'm hanging ornaments on empty space, gold lips like a comb, plastic hairpins in empty space. I'm sticking wire pins into empty space. And last one poem, it came from one-line poems, and he's probably the master. He has books and books, Michael Palmer. He does a very interesting job, how he goes from line to line. Makes me sometimes think of those linked verse, that very well done linked verse. How the sentence moves from one to another. And something like this. Many gathered, many friends, maybe everyone. Many now and then may have entered. The ivory keys fell from her mouth, the typewriter keys. Many fell at the entrance, many held them. Many fell forward and aware. Various friends gathered at the entrance. Some held back. The room contained a question. Many said now, before then, this, then, that. The room contains a question to be named. He said, I'll tell the book the dream. The words tell me. The room is not the place or the name. That's it. Okay, I end with a quiz. When you write a poem, I said, you know, the prepositions are sparingly used, and when it's used, it should be used as effectively as possible. You remember this one? So don't
stop. I'll stay quiet.
Yes. So, one word would you put there? The room is white, that red apple. Makes sense? But, yes.
Bite.
Yes. That's one way to go, and it's really good. But actually, this poem's a little different. There's another way.
See.
See that red apple. It's getting closer, yes. What she did was she put until.
Oh, it was white until that.
So it kind of plays with it, right? Until time right. And the space. She remove. Kind of.
Remove.
Remove that.
Get it out of here.
Oh, that's funny.
Maybe we should write down every version. Okay, so that's all I have. Thank you.
Questions from
the hall. I had a question.
Yes.
I have laryngitis and all this. The number 7 is considered the perfect number. I think it represents Earth 4 mm-hmm. and the Heavenly Trinity 3.
Yes.
It's like perfection.
Right.
So I don't know what 5 means. Is
5 is the perfect number for Chinese tradition. 5 elements. That's
five
the most
what?
Important. 5 elements.
Elements.
Like I think it's like fire, earth,
Yeah.
Air, water.
More than fire.
The fire. But this five, yeah, five and seven, I really haven't seen the documentation on it, but 5-7 came from Chinese poetry. And Chinese language and Japanese language are totally different. Chinese sentence structure is more like English. The Japanese, our sentence structure is totally different. But we borrowed Chinese characters. So we use Chinese characters on a totally different language. So how the Chinese poem became Japanese tanka, it takes too many twists, I'm sure, and it's not documented probably. That happened probably between the year 0 to 4th century, sometime around then, or even before, because Chinese poetry was completed, was in this shape by the 5th century. So after 5th century, they call it modern. It's really like, and then they use, they have two types of poetry, traditional poetry, 5 characters and how many lines, or 7 characters, how many lines. Those are the, you know, two different groups. So I'm sure the number 5-7 came from that.
So when you say, now you just said something that's confused me. When you say, you said 5 characters, mm-hmm. and throughout the presentation you were saying 5 syllables.
Yeah, oh, syllables are on rest.
So I understand 5 characters mm-hmm. if you're reading.
Yeah, 5 Chinese characters.
Because Chinese character
has one sound in
right.
each character.
Okay.
That's why in Chinese it's automatically 5 sound. So probably that's where it came from.
Okay.
But I haven't read anything really about it. Probably I should look, but yes. Everything in Japan came from China.
So haiku, you said it should be like non-judgmental. People don't say that's good and that's no good.
Oh, that's wrong.
That's
or,
wrong.
So that's why I have so much trouble with the form.
But there's another genre called senryu. Senryu is more having fun type thing. So it's not haiku, but the same 5-7-5, but just the different requirements. Yes.
Other questions?
Interesting.
All right, well, thank you, Mia. Okay, before we adjourn, any...